welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the lie-ridden Luke Cutfirth.
I don't lie.
This week we're talking about pseudoscience seeds, but first we have a wee review.
Where is it from?
It is from Apple Podcasts, where you can leave a review for us to read on the podcast, and the review is as follows. It is 5 stars, it says the best, and then goes on to say...
No, that's all we need to say.
No, it says it is the best podcast I have ever listened to.
Okay.
Listening is worthwhile, Luke. Best podcast I've ever listened to. I listen to it every night before I go to sleep. I love how Corey takes topics and makes them fun and easy to understand, and Luke always derails the show and goes on tangents. Literally did it during this.
Sorry.
10 out of 10. I love your podcast. I love heart hands emoji.
Oh, you can do emojis in reviews?
Apparently so.
Wow.
And maybe it's universal. Maybe it's not. So you should go to every possible site where you can review Sci Guys. Give us a 5-star review and use emojis just to test. It's a very scientific test. And speaking of scientific tests, I've got a question for you. Now, you can answer this question in the YouTube comments or over on Spotify. But if you're not on either of those things and you're listening with your ears elsewhere, here's what you do. Go to China. Get needles. Just get so many needles. And then you need to find a very large person. Needs to be a lot of surface area for you to work with. And then you just write your answer in the needles by sticking the needles into the person's back, and just creating letters out of that. Then I take a picture of it, post it to the internet, and I'll see it.
Okay.
The question is, have you ever tried acupuncture?
I have tried acupuncture.
Oh, who did you stab?
I was actually stabbed.
Wow.
A crime was committed.
White on white violence.
He was white.
Carry on.
Which, to be fair, as it's an Eastern tradition, is also interesting in and of itself. He was a white man.
A Western tradition, Luke, is to steal from other cultures. So that's perfectly within your culture to do that. That's fine.
Yeah, fair enough.
Do you want to
your
tell
culture?
Us?
Sorry, our culture. What? You're Scottish, mate.
Slip under the radar. Do you want to tell us more about your experience with acupuncture?
Yeah, so I went to have some acupuncture just sort of on a whim. I actually didn't really have anything I particularly needed to do, but someone I knew had some acupuncture and was like, this is amazing.
I just went to the GP just on a whim. I was like, give me some drugs. I don't know why. I'm feeling good, but I could feel better.
Well, yeah, life can always be better. So I thought, I'll go and get stabbed in the ear and the body by this guy. And he charged me £75 for it, which is quite steep for an hour's work, doing something that might not work and also something I didn't need. So there we go.
You chose to go in with no need, you know? That's like...
We also did some acupuncture for a documentary I did once.
Oh, yes.
A smoking cessation documentary. And that, I think, did actually have some effect.
If you don't stop smoking, we will stab you with these needles again.
Yeah.
We'll keep on stabbing you until you stop smoking.
Yeah,
it's under threat of...
That's fair. If you want to stop smoking, it might work.
So we'll get into acupuncture more specifically in a bit. I kind of want to tell you about a story that I saw recently. Now, Luke, have you seen Dragon's Den?
I have seen the show Dragon's Den.
Can you explain to our viewers and listeners the concept behind this show?
So a bunch of rich people.
Boo?
Yeah, I suppose so. They sit in some chair. I think they're all right, these rich people, but, rich people in general, maybe boo. The bunch of rich people sit in chairs with big stacks of fake money next to them. And it is fake. Apparently it was real once. I saw an interview once.
Yeah, it only needs to be real once, right? Then you learned your... Why would it ever be real? That's a ridiculous...
It was for a photo shoot, I think, because it was going to be like high quality, so the money was real. Anyway, I'm getting off track. Bunch of rich people sitting next to fake stacks of cash. A bunch of people with ideas come and pitch their ideas to them.
Well, look, some people don't even need ideas.
Yeah, that is what some of the contestants seem to have come with that attitude, because sometimes the ideas are crap. But a bunch of people with ideas come along and they pitch them and say, I want 100 grand for 20% of my business. And then the rich people go, that's ridiculous. Your business is not worth £1 million. And then they haggle them down and they get investment in their business and a bunch of free promotion. And often it's just really the free promotion that they
want. Yeah, basically it's like the...
Because it's a TV show. Sorry, I didn't say that. It's a TV show. It's called Shark Tank in other parts of the world.
Yeah, yeah. So basically it's like the X Factor or American Idol. But instead of singing, it's business
stuff. Yeah.
Businessing.
Proposing a business.
Yeah.
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 Or a product.
Proposing to a business. Getting down on one knee and telling the business that you love it very much and want to spend the rest of your life with it. But in order to do so, you need to have a rich man give you money. Much like weddings. Anyway, so what happened with Dragon's Den is they actually managed to uncover a cure for myalgic encephalomyelitis. I did not read that one out beforehand. Just thought I'd wing it, and there we go. ME, or CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome. Yeah, they uncovered a cure for that, Luke.
Are you saying this sarcastically?
I'm saying what I'm saying.
Slash S?
We'll see.
They uncovered a cure.
So this condition has no prior known cure. The episode aired on the 18th of January, 2024. Giselle Boxer, she's from Sheffield. She's a businesswoman. She had ME or CFS, and she discovered something that completely cured her. So, of course, her first port of call was to make it a business, sell it to people, and go on Dragon's Den.
Yeah, that's the Western way.
Yes. So she said she'd used diet, acupuncture, and Chinese herbs and ear seeds to aid her recovery from ME over 12 months. So an incurable condition. She managed to cure over a year with some Chinese stabbies, ear seeds, herbs, and eating well. And so she turned that idea into the brand AccuSeeds. And then she was offered investment from every single member of the Dragon's Den panel. She took £50,000 from Stephen Bartlett, Diary of a CEO.
Diarrhea of a CEO?
Basically what the show is. In exchange for 12.5% of her business. She was spiritual. So she's a spiritual person, yeah. Right? And she chose Stephen, apparently, because she was told that she'd meet a man called Stephen and that he was going to be really important.
Ah.
I feel like if you're going on Dragon's Den and you were told you'd meet a man called Stephen and he's being... like, you're just looking at a man called Steve. You know the man called Stephen is on that show.
Was she told this by the voices in her head?
I don't know who she was told it by. I think a psychic.
To be fair, though, sorry, not to advocate for psychics, but there was a YouTube video I watched recently called by I think Josh Peters, where he got a psychic and a financial advisor to both give him advice on the stock market, and the financial advisor lost to the psychic.
Is that really an endorsement of psychics or an indictment of financial advisors?
Why not both? No, it's an indictment of financial advisors. Yeah.
So obviously, when she discovered this insanely profitable and, you know, very helpful cure to an otherwise incurable condition, you know, everyone, medical communities, charities, were going wild congratulating her for curing it. And they definitely didn't complain to the BBC and make sure that a disclaimer was put on the episode that said, AccuSeeds are not intended as a cure for any medical condition, and advice should always be sought from a qualified healthcare provider about any health concerns. And then also, if we look at the company's website, there's a disclaimer there that says it's not used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. So my question to you, Luke, is this an actual cure, or is it just nonsense?
Well, it might be a cure in that the placebo effect is a cure for things, but it also might, and it also can still be nonsense. The interesting thing here is that the investment is not necessarily because they think the thing works. The investment is because they think other people will think the thing works.
That's very true. Yeah. You can lie to people and still make money.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Who knew?
So to be clear, up top when I said this woman, Giselle Boxer, found a cure for ME. No, she didn't. Look, if the cure for ME was acupuncture, we'd know that already. Like, realistically, we'd know that already. We would, because we've studied acupuncture, and ME is something that is, you know, a kind of problem right now that we don't know how to deal with.
This reminds me of this great meme I saw once where it's like just some dude sitting on his laptop in his house, and he goes, "Honey, come quick! A cure that has evaded all scientists." Yeah. And I've just discovered it just now on the internet.
Look, I mean, yeah, things can go under the radar of science. Absolutely not like this, in this way, probably, though. Do you know what I mean?
But it's also, as far as I can tell, it's just acupuncture. This is not a new thing.
It's not even acupuncture.
But it's trying to do the same thing as acupuncture. So
yeah, same principles.
Theoretically, if this thing cured ME, acupuncture also would have cured ME, and we've been doing that for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And we do use acupuncture for some things. It is researched. Mm-hmm. And we do use acupuncture for some things. Like, there is research about it. So yeah, we would have discovered this. It's not just like, oh, a brand new breakthrough discovery has been discovered on Dragon's Den.
That's very true, Luke. But we need to keep an open mind. So let's try and answer the question of whether your seeds work to cure ME / CFS. Can you?
No, they don't.
Well, let's go through the whole episode and then we'll come to a conclusion.
Okay.
Because we just can't know at this current moment.
Sorry, hang on. I've just spoken to a psychic. Mm-hmm. I think the answer is no.
The spirits are telling me to tell you to shut up and let's go through the episode. So I think that's what we're going to do.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, we're going to get some comments.
I don't give a I don't give a I am, like, I'm almost glad this came out. I am sick of people talking utter shit. I'm f***ing tired of it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, this is f***ing harmful shit to people. I'll say it in the episode later, but, like, God, I like pissing these people off. It's not as, it's satisfying to tell people, hey, like, this is wrong and it is dangerous. And this is one where, like, I can feel justified and I won't have people being mad at me because I'm telling them their pets can't talk, you know? I'm still pissed off about that. 100% still pissed off that people argued with me on whether pets could talk because they wanted them to talk. They can't. So let's first ask the question, Luke, what is chronic fatigue syndrome?
I don't think we really know. Like, I'm sure there's a description of it, but we don't know what causes it. I think you've already said that. But I guess it's probably just what it says on the tin. It's like a chronic feeling, like all the time, mm-hmm. or very frequent feeling of just being tired. And there's not one thing that's clearly causing it.
Yes. So it's a multi-system disease, commonly characterized by severe fatigue, cognitive dysfunction, sleep problems, autonomic dysfunction, and post-exertional malaise, severely impairing activities of daily living. What that means is you're exhausted all the time. You can't sleep so good, so you feel tired from not being able to sleep so good. You have dysfunction in your autonomic nervous system, so the stuff that kind of goes on automatically that you don't think about, like heartbeat and all of these sorts of things. That's not necessarily saying you've got an irregular heartbeat. There are other parts of your autonomic nervous system. I'm just saying that there's autonomic dysfunction.
Yeah.
That could be like, I think it's also maybe your sleep-wake stuff mm-hmm. is regulated by that. So don't think that people with CFS necessarily have all of the problems with all of their autonomic nervous system. Okay. To be more specific, right?
Thank you, Corey.
And then post-exertional malaise, severely impairing activities of daily living. That means when you do stuff, you get really, like, tired and don't not feel good. Mm-hmm. Bad. You feel bad after doing things, yeah. right? That's obviously not good because society demands that we do things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wants us to do things.
As big one in capitalism, don't do thing, die.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay.
Oh, not sorry, actually. Just die. Wait. Make money?
Oh, okay.
Make money.
What about if my ancestors already made money?
Oh,
can I
fine.
Do nothing?
Yeah, no, do nothing. Yeah,
great,
yeah, yeah.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do nothing, no money, die.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Might do thing then.
Yeah,
maybe.
Have do thing. If have
I,
do thing.
If I can.
that didn't feel good. But yeah, so the thing is that CFS can you often become like worse as well because it's undiagnosed. Mm. So, you know, you've got this undiagnosed condition and you're expected to sort of work to the level of an unimpaired person when in fact you have chronic fatigue syndrome. And so you're chronically fatigued
and that
syndrome.
Causes stress.
Yeah.
And then the stress makes the CFS worse. Big old loop.
Exactly, right? Like if you're trying to work a job that is actively harming you, you're going to have worse outcomes than if you rest, you know, when you're supposed to. But obviously, very difficult to do that unless you're diagnosed, and getting to a diagnosis can be really difficult. And I'll get into why that is in just a second. Now, it's got a lot of symptoms. It's a long-term condition. It's not something that, you know, you just get over in a couple weeks or whatever. It can be sort of lifelong. You probably know a few people with it, and it impacts women more. Like, I think it significantly impacts, there's more women that have this than men. And as you were saying, look, we don't really understand it. It's more common in women, tends to develop between your mid-20s and mid-40s, but it can affect anyone, including kids.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize the kids were affected.
Yeah. Yeah. CFS is coming for us all. Look, well, not all. Anyone, right? Not everyone. Anyone. So some symptoms of CFS. Do you know any symptoms? Do you want me to just list them off, or do you want to have a go?
Feeling exhausted.
That's not good, Luke. I'm sorry, but can you maybe help me with the symptoms here by listing some of the symptoms?
Feeling exhausted?
Luke, stop talking about your feelings and just list the symptoms.
Okay, the symptom of being or feeling exhausted.
Yes, Luke, well done.
And then like easily burned out, trouble sleeping. You've listed some of them already. Maybe heart problems. You listed that as well.
Yeah, so let me just run through them for you real quick. This is all from the NHS, National Health Service in the UK. Don't need to say that. Just think it's fun. Anyway, feeling extremely tired all the time. You may find it very hard to do daily activities. Still feeling tired after resting or sleeping. Taking a long time to recover after physical activity. Problems sleeping, such as waking up often during the night. Problems with thinking, memory, and concentration. And it goes on to say, the NHS, that some people with ME/CFS may also have other symptoms, including muscle or joint pain, headaches, sore throat, flu-like symptoms, feeling dizzy or sick, fast or irregular heartbeats, heart palpitations, and the severity of symptoms can vary from day to day or even within a day, right? So, like a lot of sort of chronic illnesses, it's not necessarily a consistent, like, this is the level you're at all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably something that is hard to understand for people, that it can vary. And so you're never sure what you're going to be dealing with, right? It makes life a lot harder to live when you can't consistently sort of bet on yourself being able to do X, Y, Z, right? Mm. Like, I know that every single time we go and do a Sci Guys Day where we record, you know, for the day, that I'm going to be able to do that, right? Like, pretty much always going to be able to do that. Now, there have been a couple times when I've been quite ill. Like, I got concussed once and I had COVID. Real bad luck. And both of those times, that impacted my sort of energy. Like, I had massive fatigue and sort of mental strain. Even just sitting talking to you for a bit, you know, would cause, make my life so much harder. It'd make it so hard to get through the days. Anyway. But no, my point is that, like, you know, generally, I'm not chronically ill. Like, yes, ADHD, but that's sort of manageable enough where I can understand roughly what my sort of limits are, right? Or what I'm able to sort of do day to day. But if you can sort of think about just not knowing if you're going to, like, how something is going to affect you. Like, you could have a good day, or you could have, like, a real bad day.
Yeah, so you've got you're playing a video game, but, like, the difficulty setting is just random.
Yeah.
Just, like, sometimes it'll be really hard, and sometimes it'll be, like, super easy.
And your inventory randomly, like, oh, full items. Oh, none. No. And actually, you started off with, like, 999 of everything, right? And a few seconds, oh, sorry, inventory empty now. Deal with that.
Yeah. Boop. And also, presumably, like, if you're on a day where you're absolutely exhausted, but you have obligations, if you try and force yourself into those obligations, you're going to be then in that mode where stuff's harder for longer as well.
Oh, yeah. You get into, like, energy debt, basically. Yeah. Where, like, if you overexert yourself, that could lead to burnout, and then it could take longer to recover from that. Mm-hmm. And I want to point out as well that, you know, being disabled is not easy, obviously. That's kind of the point of being disabled. But especially when you take into account that if you want to get benefits or, you know, some kind of monetary support to survive this capitalist hellscape we are currently barely surviving in, you know, if you want some monetary support, you're going to have to pass some kind of, like, that's not a test, but you know what I mean? Like, there are assessments and whatnot,
this
right?
Seems like the kind of thing that you apply for benefits and it's really hard to get them because it's so subjective, and it's also a hidden disability. As in, like, what I mean, it's so subjective from the person, like, whoever you get doing the test. It's oh, I'm missing one of my legs. It's like, oh, I feel tired. And they're like, oh, sometimes they'll be like, oh, poor you, boo-hoo, no, stamp.
But what I want to kind of highlight more is that, if, you know, someone sees you on a good day, then they're like, well, this is your capability. And it's hard to kind of, I mean, there's even this with ADHD to an extent as well, where it's hard to get across, like, just because I'm capable sometimes does not mean I'm capable at all times, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, you can't judge someone based on their best day. You've got to look at, like, the average and the sort of what their worst days are. Because, you know, there's no use saying to someone, well, you're able to have a job if randomly for, you know, Fortnite, it's like, well, I'm actually not able to have a job for this fortnight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Most places can't really accommodate that, you know? So it's something to bear in mind. And, you know, ultimately, this episode is not about ME or CFS. We can do an entire episode on that. And perhaps we should, you know, with a guest maybe who has more sort of personal experience with this. Really, what I'm trying to highlight here is just the kind of background to the topic we're about to dive into, right? And so the last thing I'm going to mention on this is sort of the diagnosis and treatment. So the treatment is generally CBT, healthy living, you know, the stuff where we don't know what to do. And so we're like, what we're going to do is say, be healthy, because that helps with most things, usually. And here's a therapist to help you not feel so bad about how the fact that we don't know how to help you with the actual problem.
Sure. And presumably, I'm sure it goes without saying, this is not helped by something like, for example, ADHD stimulants, which make you more awake.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's not helped by that.
No. To my knowledge, there is no sort of, what's the word, medical, pharmacological sort of treatment for it. I mean, and again, I did the most sort of cursory thing. I've got some background knowledge of it. You know, I've known a few people who've had CFS. And yeah, to my knowledge, there's really just like very little we can do. It's just kind of, sorry, man. Like, we don't know what's going on. Just try to stay strong.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to make light of it, you know.
It's a dreadful situation we're in when there's something that we can't do anything about.
Yeah, but that is the situation, right? And so the diagnosis. Do you know what, actually, I wanna throw this one to you. What do you think the situation with diagnosing ME/CFS is? Like, why do you think I'm gonna hit home on this diagnosis sort of so hard?
I'm guessing because there's no test you can do. And all you do is, it's like one of the, we talk about it being like a net that catches everything else. And basically they rule out, okay, it's not, for example, ADHD burnout, and it's not something else. It's not like, for example, diabetes, if you've got like problems with blood sugar. It's not these other things. It must just be like IBS. It's chronic fatigue syndrome. Slap that label on anything. We don't know what's going on.
Well, yeah, and not necessarily anything. We don't know what's going on. But yeah, like almost 5 years on this podcast, got you trained so well. Yeah. No, essentially, what I kind of want to highlight here is that we don't have a sort of test to run. There can be urine tests and whatnot, right? But generally, it's a case of ruling everything else out. Okay, it's not this. It's not that. It's not that. It's not that. So it must be this. Yeah. And that can obviously lead to misdiagnosis if it, you know, one of the things you said it wasn't, it actually was. Mm. Where it's something else that's more obscure, or you've got a strange presentation of this particular thing, right? So CFS isn't necessarily always CFS. And that's important to note. Just save that
it's
in your mind.
It's not chronic, you mean?
No. As in, it could be down to something else.
Right.
You could be misdiagnosed with CFS. Okay. And if you think about it, it's probably easier to be misdiagnosed with CFS than it is to be misdiagnosed with something like diabetes, you know? Because, you know, your blood sugar is all whack with the diabetes. And so that's a sort of, let's say, a positive thing to sort of test for, right?
Yeah.
When I say positive, I mean, you're not testing for the absence of other symptoms or other sort of indicators. It's sort of positive indicator there, where you're like, okay, is there sort of an issue with insulin production, or is there an issue with blood sugar regulation that we can measure? That's a measurable thing that you can actively look for. Whereas CFS is like, you know, okay, it's not this. You're testing for the absence of other things. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Can I just double check? So CFS. Is that what I was describing as like the catch-all? We've ruled everything else out and you've got this set of symptoms, and so we call that CFS? Or is it a specific thing?
I wouldn't say that. I don't want to say that it's sort of a catch-all for things that we don't understand.
Okay.
I think it's a thing in and of itself, and we don't understand it. And yes, I guess it could be a collection of things that we don't understand.
Okay.
But there are so many things to rule out before getting to CFS.
I guess what I'm asking is, in the diagnostic process, is it, right, you're having these symptoms, things like exhaustion, things like trouble sleeping, we've checked for these other things, and so and it's not those things, so we call that CFS.
Yeah, so I don't want to make a kind of definitive statement on that. Mm-hmm. Look, let's just put it this way. It's complex, controversial, and not necessarily entirely understood. You know, it could be caused by viral infections and whatnot, right? Like if you look at the name ME, that sort of encephalo blah 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 blah, whatever word I said earlier, right? Don't have it in front of me, can't remember it. Not gonna look, man. Myalgic encephalomyelitis, that would be it's sort of talking about an inflammation of, I think, sort of brain, spinal cord sort of thing, right? So I don't want to go in and say it is just the catch-all term for everything else we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of its own thing, but it also does exist as kind of like, if it's none of these other things, then it must that would, if we rule out all these other things, then we can say it's this.
Okay, great.
Right. So the point to get across here is that it can be misdiagnosed. There's no known treatment. It's not very well understood. And, you know, there are situations wherein, the NHS literally has this quote saying, as the symptoms of ME/CFS are similar to those of many common illnesses that usually get better on their own, a diagnosis of ME or CFS may be considered if you do not get better as quickly as expected.
Mm-hmm.
If you then get better, it might not have been CFS.
Right.
You know what I mean? And what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another person, even if it is CFS, right? So it's like, it's very hard to kind of be like, we've got a catch-all cure for this thing, because it's not very well understood at all,
mm-hmm.
right? That is kind of everything you need to know right now on CFS. It is not well understood. You can only diagnose it by ruling out everything else, mm-hmm. basically. And there is no current treatment whatsoever.
But have you tried squeezing your ears?
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I thought it was my tinnitus, but it turns out it's the ad bell.
What is he ringing for this week, Luke?
Well, today the show is being sponsored and supported, as always, actually, by our Patreon.
What? A Patreon? Is that where people can go and pay for trees on something?
That is not what it is. Maybe we'll do that as a perk one day. But for now, the Patreon is a place where people can go, people who love this show, like you, for example, can go and support the show existing. It's very complicated and expensive to make this show, and our patrons help it to exist. So we think you are very lovely for doing that.
Yeah, if you've ever noticed anyone's name scrolling through at the end of a Sci Guys episode, that's because they're our patrons, and we want to thank our patrons for helping us make this show. So to do that, we give them a whole bunch of things. Perks like bonus episodes and a different show and other things. What else do we give them, Luke?
They get to submit topic ideas for the show for Corey to consider, and then also those topic ideas go into a vote that is voted on every month by our patrons only. So they basically get to control us once a month.
So if you really love Sci Guys and you're not content with just sitting back and watching us natter on, you want to have a hand in the show, you want to be a part of it, go ahead and sign up to our Patreon, because you can be a part of this show.
Shall we get on with that show?
We shall. So Luke, what are ear seeds?
Okay, so as far as I understand them, they are a little device which you...
Sorry, that is...
What?
That is that is being very generous, but yes, carry on.
Okay, they're a thing. They're this thing that you put on your ear to squeeze. Are they like meridian points? They're like points on your ear that are theoretically and sort of in acupuncture connected to sort of nerve endings, I think. And that... supposedly triggers some response in your body that might reduce the, or in theory, reduces the symptoms of CFS.
Not just CFS. Yeah, it could be, to be clear, yeah, for anyone, that it could be done broadly as well, right?
Yeah.
This isn't a CFS-specific thing. It draws from acupuncture, which is much more holistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about acupuncture, Luke?
I know that there's theory that, like, there's parts of the body that are connected. And so you can like place incredibly precise points. The needle's supposed to like trigger some nerve, and that has like a cascading effect all over the body, and that can reduce the symptoms of pretty much everything. Depression, anxiety, it can make you sexy, it can make you president of the world.
Can it? Really?
Maybe you haven't found the right point.
Yeah, that's true.
Have you put needles
the president
everywhere?
Of the world point.
Yeah.
It's right in the butthole. No one's been brave enough to do it yet. We're all too spooked.
We need a gay president.
We need a gay president so that they can, you know, like bomb children, but with a rainbow flag on the... on the drone.
I think we already knew that. Anyway.
Not with the rainbow flag on the drone, Luke. That makes all the difference.
I don't think we're far off. So it's generally the idea that like, the whole body is connected and that there are points that connect to other points. And this is not just in the ear. It's also all over the body. Like when I spent that £75 to get acupuncture, he literally put like 3 needles in me and was like, £75.
You got swindled by a white dude, my guy. I think that's what happened. I went to get a massage and a man punched me in the chest and then took £75. I was mugged. Oh, no. Are you sure you weren't mugged by a man carrying needles?
I wasn't mugged because I gave him my card. But in all other ways, maybe I was mugged. But yes, the idea being that the whole body is connected in some way, and there are points which when you stimulate them, they make changes in your body and mind, and the whole thing's connected, and it's all very holistic.
Look, I have some excellent news for you.
Oh, yeah?
the entire body is connected.
Yeah.
That's how it stays together.
No way.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
It's mad, right? Yeah. Like my fingies connected to my hand, you know, the finger bones connected to the hand bone.
That's a song about acupuncture.
Sure.
Yeah.
Science podcast. We have all of the good and correct information. So, Luke, ear seeds. Let me just be very clear on what they are. So, ear seeds are these sort of little, they literally were seeds at one point. Now they're usually, I think, gold or silver plated little balls, mm-hmm. right? That you kind of hold in place with little stickers or like little adhesive strips or whatever, right? Now they used to be literal seeds from some Chinese plant. I can't remember which one. Do you want to know which one, Luke?
Yeah, I actually really do. So can you find out what seeds they are, please?
It's Vicaria, a flowering herb. But yeah, again, it's usually ceramic or metal these seeds are made out of now.
Okay, is there any reason why it's that specific seed, or is it just because it's spiky?
My dude, I don't know. It's okay. Probably because it's little and easy to find. I could have looked into this, Luke. I really could have looked into this. I genuinely could. I did not want to look into, like, you know, the traditional level. What I feel like it's really getting away from the point.
Okay.
Because ultimately, what we're here to discuss is whether ear seeds actually help, CFS and mm-hmm. whatnot, right? And to answer that question, we're kind of looking at the sort of metal and ceramic ones, and the history of it is not terribly important mm-hmm. because what we're more wanting to focus on is probably, you know, studies on this that look more empirically than sort of, and that's not to say that traditional medicine is entirely useless. You know, like a lot of the medicines that we use now are taken from plants that we would use way back in the day. It's just we've refined them and taken the active ingredients and whatnot, right? So I'm not here trying to dismiss sort of natural or traditional medicine. I'm just saying that if we're going to try and assess the efficacy of something, I would rather it be using sort of more scientific, rigorous testing, rather than just being like, people did this because people did other things too.
Yeah.
You know, people did things that didn't work.
If we're going to put it on the BBC, if it's going to be on like the state broadcaster for our country, it probably should, at least in theory, have some evidence backing it up. And in fact, not have quite a deal of evidence saying it's not real.
Well, look, you have no idea whether that's the case or not. So yeah, ear seeds, it's like this auriculotherapy. Basically, it's putting pressure points on your ear, like you were talking about. You had it really spot on. The idea that pressure points on your ear connect to different parts of your body. So like, oh, a pressure point there is going to connect to your nervous system and make you feel less anxious. Or this one's going to press on there, make it easier for you to sleep, right? And as I said, it draws from acupuncture. So let's get, let's needle in on what acupuncture really is. So, thank you. Acupuncture, you know, it's actually sometimes offered on the NHS. Not across the entire UK, depends on where you are, but you can get it on the NHS. And that is something that I find quite interesting, right? Because I would view things being available on the NHS as a pretty decent determinant of whether there is a fair amount of evidence to support their sort of efficacy, let's say.
Yeah, because they try not to waste NHS funds because they haven't got enough.
Well, no, because they got to waste them on other things. Like, they don't need to waste the funds. The funds are taken from them and then wasted on other things. Like,
private healthcare, private contract.
Private contractors, MP salaries, cronyism. All the stuff we really need more than healthcare. You know, lining Rishi Sunak's friends' pockets. Anyway, acupuncture. You could get it on the NHS in some places from GPs, physiotherapists. It's non-pharmacological. Do you know what that means?
Doesn't use chemicals in your body.
I mean, yes. It doesn't use, yeah. Yeah. Oh, do you know what?
Split some hairs, Corey. Go on. Split
Luke,
those hairs.
I know exactly what you're saying, and you're not incorrect. You are correct, but you know that in my brain there is that little thing where it's like, I know someone's going to be pedantic because I used to be that person.
Yep.
And they are putting chemicals in your body because everything's chemicals. The needle's made of chemicals. But the point is, the key point is that the chemicals that are being put in your body aren't, you know, chemically causing changes, for therapeutic effect, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between stabbing someone with a needle and stabbing someone's butt with a suppository that then dissolves and changes their body chemistry.
So it's like reactive chemicals as opposed to just anything.
Yeah, it's like more physical manipulation than it is chemical manipulation, yeah. Shall we say. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're so right. We all understand. I get it. I know what those people are like.
I can't imagine being that pedantic. actually, needles are chemicals.
Look, you don't get to look in our comments, man.
I don't, and I'm very lucky.
Yeah, yeah. So back on to this. So it's non-pharmacological. We know what that means. And it's used for lots of different things, lots of different diseases, symptoms. I think primarily sort of chronic pain, right? Which mm-hmm. It's a classic thing of like, you've got a chronic pain disease and Western medicine doesn't know what to do. Here's Eastern medicine, here's traditional stuff. And in some cases, that is snake oil. And I think Gen Z need to understand what snake oil is. Snake oil is this fantastic product that you can now buy from SciGuys. Now, if you head to our merch store, this oil, and I'm not joking, it is vegan. Yeah. So don't let the name snake oil confuse you. It's vegan, it's gluten-free, it's free of everything dangerous, and it will cure whatever ails you. You got anxiety? This snake oil is going to solve you. You got autism? This snake oil is going to make everyone else autistic too, so that you're, you know, the same as everyone else. You got ADHD? You can focus with this snake oil. You ginger? Look, what's the snake oil going to do for you?
Oh my god, I'm not ginger anymore.
Wow, fantastic.
Oh no!
You actually are? Oh, you're turning ginger again.
Oh
look,
no!
You have to take some more snake oil.
Oh, great.
And back to his non-gingery self.
Thank you
this
for
snake
that.
Oil is truly fantastic. And you should buy it for lots of all of your money. Give me loads of money. However much you think it's worth, add all of your money to that and give it to me.
But then they can't afford it.
I don't care. they can pay it in installments.
Okay. Klarna.
So snake oil, Luke, do you want to describe what that is to anyone that
Yeah, so snake oil is the idea that you can be sold something that doesn't actually do anything, but somebody claims that it does, and they're like a really good salesman. It's like in Sweeney Todd. There's like Pirelli's Miracle Elixir, mm-hmm. and it's actually what? Piss and ink? But they say it like makes your hair grow, and it's I think it has a real historical sort of basis for the name snake oil. Mm. But a snake oil salesman is somebody who can just sell you anything. They're a really great salesman, but the thing they're selling doesn't necessarily have any real utility. But it might, crucially, snake oil might make you think that something happened because of the effect, which names I've forgotten.
The placebo effect.
The placebo effect. Because of the placebo effect. You might genuinely go, oh, I actually feel better now, because you think that you did. So the sales aspect sort of did have an effect, but only because you believed it did.
But only for some things. We've done an episode that talks about things of the placebo effect. We'll maybe do an entire episode just on the placebo effect if we haven't done that already. We have done so many. I don't remember them all. But placebo effect episodes will be linked on YouTube right now. But the point is with snake oil is that, yes, snake oil is something that is claimed to have sort of health benefits. It's sort of deceptive marketing, right? It's saying this thing will cure what ails you. And actually, it either doesn't do anything or actively harms you, right? So a snake oil salesman is someone who just kind of swindles people, right? Mm-hmm. It is good to mention the placebo effect, but I don't want anyone coming away from this thinking that snake oil is good. Snake oil is like bad, pretty objectively bad. It, like the few people that might be affected by the placebo effect, you know, which again, by the way, if you know, if we're talking about, say, cancer treatments, right, there are some people who will go through a round of cancer treatment and then they're told, hey, we need to give you some more treatment just to be extra sure, extra safe, and they're like, no, I'm going to do medicine that is natural, homeopathy, I'm going to eat special berries and fruits, and ultimately, you know, they survive because they had a good chance of surviving anyway. They were, you know, their doctors were just being safe with the sort of continued treatment. Mm. And then other people hear that and they're like, oh, I can do the same. And they die from their aggressive cancer that they could have got chemotherapy for.
This is exactly what happened to Steve Jobs, by the way.
Really? Oh, yeah. So,
well, the reverse, actually, of what you've just described. And this is why it's so important to call out stuff when it's pseudoscience.
Yeah.
Because, so for example, Steve Jobs had pancreatic cancer, I believe. Mm-hmm. He thought that he could cure it by eating just fruit. Mm-hmm. And then his cancer continued progressing and he got surgery too late and he died. I'm going off of memory, but that's broadly what happened. He delayed actual medical cancer treatment and he died. And it's very sad. And that will happen to a lot of people.
But we have the iPhone from it. That's how it works, right? He birthed the iPhone upon his death.
No, the iPhone was that already existed.
We might so the have iPhone killed him.
No.
I don't think I understand this, Luke. We're going to have a conversation off pod. But to get back to So, I want to be clear. I'm not trying to characterize all natural medicine as snake oil, right? Like, I will have respect for something that has some kind of consistently positive effect, right? That can't be explained necessarily just by placebo or by poor data collection or some kind of outside bias, right? So acupuncture, I don't understand it. I'm not going to claim to say that I understand it. I mean, we don't really have a huge understanding of it. But what I do respect is that there are some studies showing that it apparently may have some benefits for certain things like chronic pain. I don't want to go out and say acupuncture 100% works for anything that you're told it works for. But it may actually be useful for, certain things. It's very old. 2500 BCE in China. You know, it kind of goes, right? If you want to know when something was invented, it was in China a long time ago. Almost definitely, right? Like, they came up with everything. Ice cream. They did ice cream.
Printing press, I think they did before us as well.
Yeah, but we did it white.
Yeah, we did. White paper.
And as you know, Luke, white makes right. So, God. I would not get away with saying the things I did if I was like a couple shades paler, I'll tell you that, man. No, yeah, so there's been a lot of studies on acupuncture, but it's really difficult to study acupuncture. Can you maybe give some reasons why you think that might be?
Why not?
Right, so
just give a bunch of acupuncture to a bunch of people.
See, that's interesting, right? You think it might be really easy, but when you think about it maybe a little bit more about the actual sort of logistics of doing a double-blind study, for example, right?
You've got to poke needles into someone.
But you can't poke needles into someone. You have to find a control for poking needles into someone where the person that's running the sort of experiment doesn't know like who has actually had the needles stuck into them. And the person doesn't know whether they've actually had needles stuck into them. And then also, you've got to have, the acupuncturist follow like a very strict set of guidelines, you know, with their acupuncture, which is just not really how that works necessarily.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult to actually study. And just to give you a bit of background on acupuncture, the way that it's sort of said to work, the kind of the idea behind it is that there's qi in your body. And qi, I'm going to butcher this, by the way, right?
Sure.
So there's qi in your body, which I think is kind of like energy.
Life force.
Yeah, kind of like energy flowing through your body. And there are different sort of paths that it can flow through. And there are, what was that word you used earlier? Because it was correct and I can't remember it. Meridian points, I think it is, right? There are certain points there where things connect. And by sort of pressing on those or, you know, opening those up or redirecting those, opening those up or stimulating them with the needles, you can redirect energy or open energy through, if you know Avatar the Last Airbender, right?
Getting blocked.
Yeah, his chakra got blocked and he couldn't go into the Avatar state. That's the same thing as acupuncture, except it's not, that's an American TV show I'm comparing to ancient Chinese medicine, and it's actually very culturally insensitive to do that, so I won't do that. But but it's a similar kind of concept of energy
being sort of trapped flowing, in places.
Yeah, flowing through your body
blocks,
and being trapped. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the idea behind it. Now, that doesn't really match with sort of Western science or current kind of modern science, right? Our understanding there. But you know, the way that we kind of think it might work is that these, you know, for sort of pain, these sort of stimulations result in the release of a change in sort of hormonal balance or release of endorphins or certain like sort of, you know, chemicals in that area that then has a knock-on cascading effects, blah, 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 right? Like you stab a needle in a specific place and it changes the balance of chemicals or hormones or anything in your body, which could then have that sort of therapeutic effect that we're looking for, right? And again, we don't know a lot about this. It is very difficult to study, but it has been used to treat nausea, pain, allergies, hot flashes, breathing difficulties, mood disorders, indigestion. And actually, like this, I'm reading all this verbatim. In my notes, it literally says, and even tobacco use, which is probably why you did it in that documentary.
Yeah, and
right?
It was actually, I believe, going off memory, I think it was in the ears as well that we did it.
So it would probably be more like acupressure, which is same concept as acupuncture. Acupuncture is using needles. I think acupressure is hitting pressure points as opposed to Like, you know, breaking through the skin. Now, these needles will go... Do you know how deep they go, usually?
I think it's pretty deep. I think it's deeper than you think, like an inch or something.
So, generally, it's about a centimeter, so 3 to 10 millimeters. No,
okay,
no, no, no.
I'm wrong.
But, I mean, and, you know, I
that's still quite
don't
deep.
Know much about this. Yeah, you say
I
this,
right?
I don't
like the idea of that being a centimeter in my arm or my leg or my tummy.
Well, here's the thing. Insertions can also go up to about 25 centimeters for some procedures. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's so old, right? It is older than most things you know about, right? It's older than most things we can conceptualize of. 2500 BCE. That is ancient China, right? And again, we've not got many high-quality studies on this, but from what we do know, there's clearly enough sort of evidence there for the NHS to be like, yeah, it's not a total waste of money. It does have some effects, whether that's, you know, placebo effect, who knows. But it's generally for the more sort of psychosomatic things, where it's like unexplained chronic pain, things that, you know, can be modulated by the nervous system in some way, right? You notice that kind of link there between all of those, like nausea, hot flashes, allergies to an extent. I don't know its efficacy with allergies, right? But like, you know, indigestion, all of these sorts of things, pain. These are things that are generally moderated by your body, by your nervous system, right? And so it does make a degree of sense that stimulating your nervous system in some way could have effects on those, right? Again, I don't want people to think that I'm coming out and saying acupuncture definitely 100% works for everything that it's advertised or claimed to work for. I'm also not trying to say it doesn't work at all. I'm sitting so squarely on this fence. More data is needed, but... Yeah. Seems that it does work for some things, yeah?
Yeah. I'd love to know, like, I feel like it wouldn't be the most impossible thing to test in the world. Obviously, you're talking about, like, does it work for X thing? But I'd love to know, like, if there's meant to be a point in the body that's meant to stimulate another point of the body that's far away, I'd love to know if we can set up some kind of sensor or detecting device in that part of the body that... And then we poke this part of the body and something genuinely changes over there that doesn't change if we poke a different part of the body.
Well, so apparently functional MRI, so that's magnetic resonance imaging, you know what MRI is, yeah? That has shown physiologic changes in the central nervous system whilst undergoing acupuncture.
Wow.
So yeah, again, right?
But in the area, because obviously your central nervous system is going to do something if you poke it with a needle.
Yeah.
But is it like correlated to the area that it's claimed to be about? Because obviously we do know we have that. Is it the homunculus in the brain? We know that at some point areas of our body map onto areas of the brain in some way. And it's not necessarily in the order we'd expect, like the feet are next to the genitals, weird stuff going on there. And so, you know, it's not outside the realms of possibility. One can theorize, and I'm, again, not claiming that this is how it works, but one can theorize that bits of the body are connected up to other bits of the body in ways that aren't obvious on the outside. And we know that to be true with the way that our body parts, our senses are mapped onto the brain in ways that we wouldn't necessarily compute and in scales that we wouldn't necessarily compute. For example, our hands have a way bigger representation on the brain than their surface area on our body because they have more nerve endings, right? Yep. And so you can theorize as to why it might happen, but it feels like the kind of thing that you could create a hypothesis for. Oh, when I do this thing should change in some way, and that thing shouldn't change when I do a different thing in a different area. And I'd love to know, because if it's true, it's so fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, look, we'd all love to know. So, I mean, I've got some theories for how it, I say theories, hypotheses, should be very specific here. Hypotheses for how this might work. So it could be, and I'll just read these verbatim and then we can kind of discuss through it, right? So it could be that the stimulation influences inflammatory markers, inducing hormonal changes, that the pressure itself manipulates loose connective tissue that causes immunomodulation, and the analgesia, do you know what that is?
I know the word analgesic, but I can't remember what it means.
So it's to relieve pain, yeah? So the kind of, let's say the pain-killing effect, right, is from the release of natural opioids at both spinal or supraspinal levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically what these different sort of hypotheses mean is that it's really, they all come down to the same basic thing, right? That stabbing someone with a needle in a specific place can cause some kind of chemical change within mm-hmm. the body, right? Hormonal, or like affecting your immune system in some way, not necessarily even chemical, right? But like biochemical, like stimulating connective tissue
yeah.
can make your immune system be like, I'm going to act slightly differently.
Or I'm going to go there. I'm going to go there. Something's happened. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And the painkilling effect could be, yeah, release of natural opioids. So as in like right. the natural painkiller sort of like, you know, boop, there.
It. Right. So like a really small, sharp jab might trigger the brain to go, oh, I need to send some painkilling to that area.
Something. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't want to get too specific about this because I'm not an acupuncturist. Mm. I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not an endocrinologist. I could list off. Do you want to list off all the things that I'm not?
Yeah, go on.
I'm not an astrophysicist.
Oh.
I'm not a baker. Oh, not super relevant, sake. But yeah. I'm not a Sagittarius.
I don't even know why I'm here anymore.
And most of all, I'm not going to continue with that bit.
You obviously haven't heard me introduce you to people. Like, that's like the exact list. Like, this is
all
Corey.
All of those, really.
Baker, astrophysicist, Sagittarius.
No wonder people are so disappointed when they meet me. All this, I thought it was just my terrible personality, but it turns out, no, you've just been selling me. You've been selling me too hard.
I've got NASA lined up here to send an experiment up to the ISS for baking bread in space.
Oh, I'll do that. Yeah. No. NASA, I'm ready to bake bread in space. I can't talk, but I can sure as hell bake a loaf in space. You know, I'll do it. So, as I said, it's difficult to prove the efficacy of acupuncture just because it's really hard to sort of build a good study around it, you know? The individual treatment aspect of it, right? Like, it's not like you can say this group of six people are going to get the exact same. It's almost like a massage, right? Like it's based on, you know, if you've ever had like a sort of deep tissue or like a sports massage or something, it's kind of, they ask you like, okay, well, what are your issues here? Like, what do we need to focus on? Right. So like, you know, a massage that I've had is different than a massage that someone else I know that's gone to the exact same person has had, you know, and we had the same personal trainer and everything. It's like we just had different areas of our body that needed focusing on. And so, it would be difficult to build a study around that when, you know, in the course of the treatment, you might be like, ah, actually, it makes more sense to focus on this part and not that part, you know. And so being really specific on that point could be difficult as well. Also, the specific methods can be different, right? There's different sort of styles or schools of thought around this. There's not a lot of consistency there. And science likes consistency when building an experiment. You want to have as few variables as possible if you're trying to figure something out. You want to have, ideally, you want to have one bloody variable that you are looking at, you know, to see whether that has an effect, the effect that you're looking at. But yeah, with acupuncture, it does just make it a lot more difficult to make a definitive sort of, this is proof of acupuncture's efficacy, or this is proof of the lack of efficacy, right? Mm. So where we're at with acupuncture right now is, we don't know how it works, but it seems to be fine. Go for it. It's put it this way. I wouldn't call acupuncture pseudoscience. And you know me, Luke. I despise pseudoscience. Mm-hmm. It genuinely makes me angry. Mm-hmm. It's if you really want to make me mad, there are a few things you can mention. You could, conspiracy theories around science. I don't want to say the exact name, but anti-preventative treatment that will, you know, stop people from getting horrible diseases and potentially dying as children, adults, blah blah blah. Right? VAX.
Yeah.
Again, if you're against those, if you're against vaccines, I'm mad. I'm like immediately 100% furious, right? If you're pushing pseudoscience, oh, I'm mad, man. Oh, if you're telling someone that you can give them this sort of like holistic homeopathic medicine by diluting the thing that harmed them to a point where the only thing you're giving them is plain water, oh, I'm fighting you, mate. We're scrapping. I get mad, right? So acupuncture doesn't trigger that in me. There we go. There's a test. I don't get mad about it, so it's clearly not.
Are you the litmus test for pseudoscience?
I think that's it. I think if it makes me mad, then it's pseudoscience. I think that's how we figure it out from now on, right? Just, it's the same as like my gaydar. I can tell if a woman is, you know, queer based on whether or not I have a crush on her.
Right.
Almost exclusively queer women, Luke. I don't know how it works, but if I think you're hot as a lady, you ain't straight. I don't make the rules.
That's the death knell for your heterosexual identity. Corey finds you hot.
Anyway, so that's acupuncture, right? And obviously ear seeds, as we mentioned, draw on acupuncture. So acupuncture kind of works. Ear seeds, Luke, does that not mean that ear seeds work?
That doesn't necessarily mean that ear seeds work.
Exactly. So can you think of any reason why ear seeds, you know, might not be as effective as acupuncture? Now, let me just give you some background here to help you along the way. Acupuncture, something that's done, you know, usually, almost done by someone else, right? Compared to ear seeds that you can buy online and stick on yourself at home. What might be a difference between those two things?
Accuracy?
Accuracy in what sense?
Of where you put it.
Yeah, so the application.
Yeah. Because you're just sticking sellotape on your ears. But also, secondly, you're not stabbing anything. So, like, even if in the theory, in one of those theories we had about acupuncture, which is like maybe it causes some inflammatory marker to go off in the brain thinks something's there, so it sends either painkillers there or it sends the immune system there. You're just touching the ear. You're not penetrating the skin, so you might not have the same. Like, it's not the same thing. It's just not the same thing.
So yeah, but it is. So acupressure is in the sort of same school.
Okay.
As acupuncture, right? Both ancient Chinese sort of medicines, and acupressure, I think, is similar to acupuncture, in the sense that it can stimulate sort of nerves. The idea is that it can stimulate nerves in certain places, right?
Okay.
So, I mean, you are right. The efficacy of acupuncture versus ear seeds, they're not a one-to-one because they are different things, right? But acupressure seems to be, you know, to have some merit to it. So we can't necessarily dismiss ear seeds on the basis of them not breaking the skin. I know that's not what you're saying.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, no, you're so right. But then we can't just dismiss it, right? So we need to find something else. And I'm not saying this to correct you.
Yeah.
I just want to lead us through how I would maybe go through trying to figure out whether to trust something like this or not.
Sure.
Right?
But also, you wouldn't necessarily be able to rule out ear seeds based on the user applying them in the wrong place. Because, well, what if the user applies them in the right place? Or what if the user, ear seeds could be a service that you go to an ear seed person who knows where to put it.
But this is the thing, right? If I talk about ear seeds and the problems with ear seeds, right? One, there's tiny little bits of metal that you're keeping next to your ear. Bad idea. Don't put little metal balls stuck to your ear. They will get stuck in your ear. This is a thing this is a recorded thing that happens. People, like, the balls, there's a risk of them falling into your ear. You don't want that. You just don't want to have a foreign object lodged in your ear canal. That's just, please don't do that. So first, yeah, you know, that kind of risk there. But the application thing, I think, is really important because, yeah, sure, someone can do that themselves properly, but someone can also inject themselves properly with a medicine. But there are medicines you need to go to the doctor to be injected with to ensure that it's done properly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't then be like, you can start injecting yourself with whatever you want because you might be able to do it right, you know? The efficacies of acupressure and acupuncture seem to be significantly impacted by whether the person actually knows what they're doing or not.
Yes, of course. I just mean that we wouldn't be able to call it pseudoscience if it does work, it's just you place them wrong.
Yeah, sure. There are many criticisms we can make of ear seeds, and my problem with them is holistic. It's not just their pseudoscience. I do hate them because they're pseudoscience, but it's more than that. It's the snake oil aspect. I despise that. I despise people that take advantage of the ignorance of others. You know, I don't appreciate that in any way whatsoever. I mean, we were watching a sort of news story at one point, Luke, you and I, wherein someone that worked for, I think someone that was a doctor or was involved with ME/CFS charities, had patients contacting them saying, hey, I saw this on Dragon's Den. I wanted, this is going to cure me. I want it. And being the doctor, having to be like, look, we don't have evidence of this. Like, there's, I Like, yeah. don't get your hopes up. Like, do you know what I mean?
And that's not a good position to be in if it's like one government agency is telling you this thing, well, not explicitly telling you it works, but advertising it. Mm. And I think the BBC does have a responsibility not to show something that most or all doctors would say doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. BBC doesn't seem to have much issue with going against the general medical consensus in general, you know. They're very happy to have people spout nonsense about trans people all the time. Yeah. So I suppose this is just this is a lateral move, if anything. But no, carry on, Luke.
Well, yeah, it's not a good situation to have the BBC, who are, whether they are literally, they are generally seen as like part of the state, part of the establishment, part of the country's sort of like the mechanisms of the country. You want to be able to trust the BBC. The BBC is constantly priding itself on how well trusted it is, according to obviously itself. And then your doctor saying a different thing. And that might be a private doctor. It might be an NHS doctor. But especially if it's an NHS doctor, it's two separate branches of the state saying two different things would be a very weird situation to be in, especially when the BBC doesn't advertise. So it's not even like, you know, they have a thing where someone can pay to spout nonsense on the BBC. Mm. The BBC actively do not do paid advertisements. So when they are showing a product, they kind of have a bit of a responsibility to make sure that product isn't complete nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely. If it can cause harm, they have a duty of care, I would say.
Even if that's just financial harm.
Yeah. And one thing I want to... Well, it's not just financial harm, right? Because there are, you know, if someone is trying to find a cure for this currently incurable condition, you know, it's not just they're spending all their money on it. It could be that it's actively harming their health because they're not taking seriously other potential treatments, right? So it's not just that. I also want to point out as well the difficulty of being the person as to say the sort of the less fun option. Having to be the buzzkill, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Of, the BBC's like, hey, look at this thing, ear seeds, they might work, blah, 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 blah. And the doctor's like, no, it doesn't. And look, I mean, I once said in a video, I mean, your pets probably can't talk, right? All the dogs that are pressing all the buttons are just pressing the buttons. They don't necessarily understand the language. And the arguments people had, Luke, they were so angry. They said, you don't respect animals. I'm like, I am a vegan. I respect animals probably more than most people do, right? Like, I don't bloody eat them, for one, and I don't want to cause harm to animals where possible. But I also recognize that dogs and cats probably don't have a command over the human language, or we'd have bloody noticed it by now. It's not like soundboards are the limiting factor of, you know, dogs communicating using sort of English, right? So putting yourself in the position where you have to say the probably true, like the most likely true, but less fun, the less desirable option is difficult. It turns people away, especially with, it comes into the whole conspiracy theory as well of like, this treatment causes this neurodevelopmental disorder. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say what they are, either of them, because this video will get demonetized and blocked if I even so much as hint at it. What I will say is that crazy theory, pseudoscience, nonsense, this doctor came up with it to sell his own version of a vaccine, and now people aren't taking vaccines because of some silly snake oil going on, right? Like, it's absolute nonsense. And I really, really, really want to stress that, like, you know, a lot of this comes from people not wanting to accept, like, a less desirable truth, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if your kid is autistic and you don't want them to be autistic, it's much easier to think, oh, well, this was caused by some external factor rather than, like, genetic, man. It's just how it is.
Yeah.
You know, people don't want to take the less fun or the less desirable option sometimes, and in a lot of cases that's what's probably true. You need to, like, you know, and if someone else is trying to sell a more engaging or sort of quick fix or, you know, desirable alternative, it's really difficult to sort of stamp that out, like, you know, when it's pseudoscience, you know, even if it's like blatantly wrong, because people don't function logically. And I'm not saying that people, like, and we do as a race, we struggle with logic.
And, you know, the target here is people who are desperate for a fix.
Yeah.
Like, and so when you're desperate for a fix, you are much more prone to believe something, try something, buy something, because you're living with this thing. There's no end in sight. Everyone who with any power supposedly to fix things for you can't do anything and is telling you there's basically no hope. It's really not very nice. Do we have any studies of evidence to show that these things are pseudoscience?
We have no studies to show that they do work.
Sure. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, there's no studies.
We attempted studies to show that they work, and they have been found lacking in evidence.
Look, there's no studies to show that they work. Okay. As in, and that's what I'm going to say, right? We don't have any evidence that they do work. Mm-hmm. Finding evidence that they don't work, Luke, is really hard.
Sure.
It's really hard. I can't sit here and say, like, we have evidence that this absolutely doesn't work. When applied properly, there might be some effects, but the concept of an ear seed that you put on yourself with a little sticker, it's probably not going to work. And especially, I say probably not, it's almost definitely not going to work. And it's certainly not going to cure CFS. Mm-hmm. Spoiler, by the way. Yeah, no, these do not do anything for CFS. That's why on the company's website, they have to say it's not a medical thing. Because luckily in the UK, we've got some pretty good laws around advertising medical devices and providing sort of medical services, wherein you can't just say, I have a thing, it's going to help you. You know, you can't just like submit it to the FDA and be like, it's on it. The FDA have looked at it.
But the trouble is, the thing about this is it's so dangerous. Like when you have a product, right? Say you have ME. And you have a product and you buy it and it works for some reason. It works as in like it could be just the placebo reason it works. And then you look at the website and it's saying this is not a medical product. It doesn't cure anything. We're not allowed to essentially saying we're not allowed to say it cures anything because this government agency says we're not allowed to. That can make you start distrusting the government agency.
Yep.
Because you don't want to believe, oh, I'm just a silly emotional thing that the placebo effect works on me because I don't make any sense because we have these weird little shortcuts. And it's not just because the effect is so real to you. It feels so true. Oh, wow. My symptoms have gone or they're lessened. And then it makes you into conspiracy theorists because you think that the government's trying to hide the solutions from you and sell you pills and it's all this big pharmacological conspiracy. It's not good.
And the rough thing is that like this is what I find really difficult, and I'm probably going to regret touching on this and having to immediately veer away from it to bring the episode to a close. But it's the same thing where you see sort of, how do I put it, Nazis, anti-Semites, racists, white supremacists, all those sort of people, right? And some of them, you know, like alt-right people and all that as well, some of them, you're like, oh man, you're so close. You're so close, right? It's a situation of where they're like, there's a problem. And I'm like, yeah, there is a problem. Like, there is a group on top who are controlling things. I'm like, yes, there is a group on top who are controlling things, and they have all the money. And I'm like, yes, and they have all the money, and they want to keep other people poor. Yes, they do want to keep up other people poor. And, you know, a lot of things in this world are built to keep the status quo as it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go on, go on, go on. And like, who is it? And they're like, Jews. I'm like, no! So close. Oh, yeah, I was with you until you thought the sort of shadowy cabal running the world was Jews and not just rich people, just billionaires and rich people and stuff,
and
right?
A system a system that makes things unfair.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. A system that makes things unfair also to Jewish people as well, like sure. Who are significantly impacted by this, more so than many other groups. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, guys, like we're so close, you know? Like if only you weren't a Nazi, you know? Like, you're right, you are... You gotta hand it to Nazis, Luke. They are able to see that there is a problem. They're just so incredibly, incredibly wrong about what the problem is. It's like, you know what, guys? Yes, we do need a revolution, a restructuring of society. It is problematic the way that it currently is. It isn't the Jews that are the Jewish people. They're not the problem. You know, that's not it. But good try, you know. Maybe go back to the drawing board. And I do need to say, no, you do not, in fact, gotta hand it to him. That was
sure.
That was a reference to said meme. But yeah, no, it is interesting, right? That even a conspiracy theorist there, you see people rallying against big pharma, blah, 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 all of that sort of stuff, right? there are genuine issues. There are genuine things to be aware of, but I find it's too easy to fall down a conspiracy theory pipeline. It's too easy to fall in down the alt-right pipeline and have people convince you that the reasons for all of these sort of problems that you're noticing are some sort of, you know, some marginalized group, when in fact it is literally the exact, it's so staring you in the face, right? It's like that thing you put on the glasses and you see like Obey and all that from that bloody movie whose name I can't remember, right? It's very much just out in the open, but it's so easy to trick people into thinking that, you know, the enemy is a marginalized group, or the enemy is your neighbor, you know? And I feel like, you know, we've kind of veered off a little bit, and it seems almost crazy to link ear seeds to Nazism. That's not what I'm doing. But what I'm saying is...
This is a that, short.
Sure. What I'm saying is that the sort of thought process that leads people into, you know, multi-level marketing sort of scams and this sort of homeopathic medicine and like bullshit traditional medicine. And, you know, I need to specify bullshit traditional medicine, because not all traditional medicine is, you know, completely ineffective. But these sort of mindsets that get people drawn into these things are the same ones that get people drawn down the alt-right pipeline and whatnot, right? Yeah. It's a similar thing where you sow doubt, and there are genuine reasons to be doubtful of, you know, sort of some societal structures. And if you sow enough doubt and redirect enough, you can pull people away from the actual problem and make money off of them, you know, make money and get your own way and put yourself on top, gain power and whatnot from making people act against their own interest for the sake of your interest.
Yeah, I think what links them together is it's often the exploitation of some of our cognitive biases, right? We have a bunch of cognitive biases. Some of them are exploited in multi-level marketing. Some of them are exploited in taking advantage of people who are adverse to risk. Some of them are exploited by just being tired and being tired of the condition you have and being desperate. But all of these things are things that we should not be encouraging. We should spot them when someone's taking advantage, whether they know they're doing it or not, when they're taking advantage of either a weakness in another person or a cognitive bias in all people. And especially our BBC should not be doing that. Like, and our rich investors, like the rich investors should not be doing that. The BBC should not be doing that. And I was really disappointed by the BBC's response to this when they were criticized. They were like, we don't endorse anything. We just show things. It's like you have more responsibility than that. In the same way that when someone says Marmite and you have to go, other yeast extracts are available, you have a responsibility not to advertise something that is taking advantage of people who are in a weak position because of a condition they have that's very hard to live with, and a cognitive bias that we all have, which is we don't intuit the placebo effect. And we sometimes can be desperate for a solution, even if there's no evidence whatsoever.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the people, you know, the rich folk who are investing there, because I just want to point out, Stephen Bartlett grinds my gears, man. Like, you know, a little podcast here, gonna take a shot at the big guy. I don't care, man. That's not what's going on. I don't like seeing people spread misinformation willy-nilly. We have made mistakes on this podcast, absolutely. Of course, when I make mistakes, it's me researching. I'm just some dude, right? I'm just a guy. But we do try and rectify those mistakes. We do try and make clear when those mistakes are made. And we don't, I think, sort of compromise on accuracy for money, right?
Sure.
Like, I mean, we've since turned down money for things because we've had pushback and looked into it and been like, oh, right, yeah, no, we shouldn't be supporting this because it just doesn't align with our values, and it's just it could be harmful, right? I think we try to be pretty bloody hot on that, right? So when seeing someone with such a massive platform, you know, because this ear seeds thing that he invested in, this isn't the first time that he's done this sort of nonsense. He's had a bunch of nutritionists. He's been in sort of firing line for having a bunch of nutritionists, or rather having medical doctors on to talk about nutrition when that's not their specialty, and the things they're talking about just aren't really supported by much data, like, or they're misrepresenting studies, whatnot, right? Like, looking at Diary of a CEO as a place for good information on certain topics is probably not the best idea, especially when someone involved in the show has some involvement with some company that wants to replace, you know, people's sort of food with perhaps a liquid food of some sort. I don't know anything about that, Luke, but all I'll say is, if someone's selling you something, make sure that they're not also telling you, you know, the efficacy of that thing and the alternatives.
Oh, do you mean Huel? I'm drinking Huel right now.
Yeah, so I'm not saying that Huel is bad, Luke, yes. Okay. I'm just saying, be cautious of the information provided by someone who is also trying to sell you something, mm-hmm. right? Like, Huel is probably fine, you know, to replace some meals with, sure. I just wouldn't be taking nutritional advice from someone who has a vested interest in you, you know, spending money on their product.
For sure, yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I think that's a pretty okay line for you to draw.
It's a very middle of the road kind of like, just if someone's advertising something to you, make sure that, you know, they're telling you the truth. And I just know that there have been issues on his podcast with people talking about nutrition and not really representing things wholly accurately, right? Mm. But to talk about accurate representation, do ear seeds cure CFS /ME?
We have no evidence to suggest that they do, and they are probably ineffective.
So no. And that's not a hard no. It could be helpful for some things. I mean, there's been some evidence that ear seeds can be helpful to relieve some kind of pain and whatnot, blah, 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 as I was saying, but there's a difference between going into somewhere and having someone apply those things to you and buying them online and sticking them on yourself and trying to apply them and take them off and maybe getting a ball stuck in your ear, causing obstruction and problems there and all of that, right? There's a difference between those things. And there's also a massive difference between, you know, saying, hey, this might help you if done in a clinical setting, and going on to a national television show and saying, I cured this disease with this thing.
Yeah.
No, I don't have any studies backing me up. And also, yes, I am taking an ancient Chinese medicine as a white person, slapping my branding on it and selling it to people who have, you know, and I don't want to say more money than sense, but like, or, you know, who are
desperate,
more desperate, yeah. You know, I just don't think that is a remotely morally justifiable thing to do. And to be very, very clear, I'm not trying to sort of diminish this woman's experience. She very well could have gone from, you know, she said she was very active. She had a very sort of a demanding job. She did all of those things. And then she was diagnosed with CFS. You know, she got CFS and wasn't able to do any of those things. She, you know, it completely derailed her life. And then after a year of all of these sorts of herbal medicines and, you know, good diet and sort of these sort of traditional treatments, right? Like acupuncture, ear seeds and all these sort of things, right? That she cured herself of ME. Or CFS, right? As I kind of mentioned up top, the reason I want to give you that background is she could have not had CFS at all.
Whoa.
It literally could have been something else.
Oh, whoa.
There's no positive way of saying this is CFS. You can only say this isn't something else.
Yeah.
So her experience, she may have had all of these symptoms and then gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
She very well could have. That is not evidence
that's
of this
insane.
Thing curing CFS.
That's insane.
Okay, I'm glad you hadn't considered that.
I hadn't
because
made that connection to
I
what
to,
you were saying
I
earlier.
Want to just hammer it and make it very clear, yeah.
That does happen. That genuinely does happen.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's the same as the same reason that I brought up that sort of cancer story earlier, which I think I probably pulled from Hank Green, to be perfectly honest with you, to, you know, do we need to cite Hank Green? And you know Hank Green if you're watching this. But the point is that, yeah, she doesn't need to be lying about her experience to be wrong.
Right.
And you don't need to attribute malice where, you know, ignorance can better explain something.
Yeah.
But either way, I think it is wrong to go up there with no evidence other than your own experience and say, I'm going to sell this to people who are desperate for some kind of relief. You're a bad person if you do that. And you're a worse person if you invest in it. And you're equally bad if you decide to put that on the air in front of millions of people.
I think that's fair.
That's the episode. There's just one thing left to do. It's a quick fire quiz.
Dun 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 dun. Chronic fatigue syndrome edition.
So the rules for the quick fire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question, Luke. That's one question between you and the audience. The first person to answer the question after finish asking it wins. What do they win, Luke?
A single ear seed.
God damn it, no.
two ear seeds?
It's just a ball bearing.
5 ear seeds. Unlimited ear seeds. You can put them over your entire body, and then it's not possible for you to put them in the wrong place because they're on your whole body.
So my question for you is, what does CFS stand
chronic
for?
Chronic fatigue syndrome.
Ding, ding, ding.
I literally said that as this is chronic fatigue syndrome edition. So I actually won before you even asked the question.
Yeah, but with your memory, mate, like, you could have forgotten it by the time I got to the question. Who? I don't know, man.
I'll try some ear seeds and my memory will get better.
Or you'll get a ball stuck in there and that'll be a whole ordeal.
Or both. Maybe the pressure point is inside my ear.
Well, that is it, okay? I don't want to talk about this anymore. For the love of God, do not just go sticking things in or on your body just because you saw someone on television say that you should do it. Medical treatments that have been, you know, assessed by people who know what they're talking about are probably better off than random things some white lady is selling on TV. But thank you very much to all of our patrons, and an extra special thank you to executive producer Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe to new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysBald on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCupPod everywhere.
Bye.
Bye.